Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Monday. I do commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:15 p.m. and that is Central Time, and today is December 8th. I thought I would look at the Selective Airlines Hotels and Cruise Lines Index today because I came back from Las Vegas last night and the airport was really very busy. And when I talked to people, then some people had been there for one rodeo, another group had been there for a different one, others had been there for an NFL game, others had been there for a hockey game. So it's, I think, fair to say that there's a good chance that we are seeing a significant recovery in travel and in people wishing to take some time away. And certainly the travel and leisure sector has been through a difficult few months, and now we're starting to see that some of these shares are starting to perk up as well. It's, I have to say, really nice to get back out into the world and walk around and actually see how things are going. So everything that I've seen so far suggests to me that the US economy is well on its road to recovery. But the other thing that we saw today was that we're seeing increasingly that the trade deficit is narrowing, and a good part of the reason for that is because of increasing demand for natural gas and oil products. And then, of course, with the travel sector beginning to recover, well, then that should also help to sustain the airlines. So when we think about the airline sector, they're obviously impacted by higher oil prices, and oil prices have been steadying over the last couple of days following a swift decline for the last 2 weeks. But the airline sector looks very like the travel and casino and cruise sector. So that's also should be supportive for companies that rely on airlines for their profits. So Rolls-Royce is obviously one of those. They've got an awful lot of engines out there that require servicing. They've got service contracts with most of the airlines. So the more miles that are flown, the more that they'll gain revenue from those service contracts. But what it also helps to suggest is that we're going to start to see the breadth in the S&P starting to recover. Now, the S&P today held on to its gain from yesterday, and that was a big gain yesterday. And it was in negative territory for most of the morning, and now it's starting to push onwards once more. So this is encouraging behavior from the broad global stock markets. When we think about the Europe Stoxx 600, it was in mildly negative territory, but it's likely to recoup some of that tomorrow. Then when we think about Japan, the yen remains quite weak, so that should help to support the stock market, and the Nikkei was up another 400 points today. But the standout today was the CSI 300, and that was up over 1%. So taking its lead from Wall Street, but it's now above the trend mean for the first time in at least 6 months. So that's, I think, a significant event. And that's also being supported by the renminbi breaking out to new highs. So there's increasing realization that Evergrande will be allowed to go bust, and that the US dollar bondholders are going to have to take a significant haircut. But and then, of course, we also have the underperformance of Caixa and the real potential that it's also going to have to default on its debt. And the share has been suspended. But the reality is that we're going to see an increasing number of these Chinese property developers going bust. And the Chinese economy will be provided with sufficient liquidity to ensure that there aren't any untoward effects, and that some of the other big property developers aren't going to be allowed to go bust. So China Vanke is the largest of the property developers, and it's been trending downwards. There's absolutely no question of that, but it is beginning to steady. And the depth of the decline isn't anywhere even remotely close to the kind of declines we've seen for companies like China Evergrande. And in this regard, we might have a parallel. So I discussed yesterday in the commentary that the gradual unwinding of non-performing loans in Europe, it's taken a decade already. They're not quite done with it yet, but it might be an analog for how China sees how it's going to deal with the property sector. But then there's also the potential that it's going to be more like what happens with the Indian banking sector. So we have State Bank of India. So that's obviously a state-owned bank, and it's obviously also done rather well over the last while. But then you have the over-levered sector, like Yes Bank, and Yes Bank pulled back in an extraordinarily violent manner and has only by the skin of its teeth been able to avoid bankruptcy. And we may be coming towards the end of this saga now because a bailout is being engineered for the company. But there's been a clear divergence in India's banking sector, where the government stepped in and supported the state-owned banks and then didn't support the privately held banks. So the privately held banks have been subject to a great deal more volatility, and even the best performing of the privately held banks has had to go through some significant restructuring over the years, and then subsequently came out the other end in a much better position. So it's potentially likely that this is an analog for what we might anticipate happening in China, that instead of a whole large number of property developers going bust, there will be some that are the most overlevered and have the most egregious abuse of credit, or the benefit of the doubt credit that had been given to them, and those will go bust. And others will then have enough liquidity to limp along, and then the ones that are state-sponsored and building state-sponsored infrastructure projects, well, then those are the ones that will do best. But China seems to be determined not to disgorge massive quantities of liquidity into the market on this occasion, because they did that in 2008. They rescued the global economy, and they don't appear intent to do that on this occasion. So I think it's particularly relevant right now, because when we look at the Asia Dollar Index, well, it hasn't really gone anywhere for most of the last few years, but it's steadying from the region of the trend mean. And of course, it's being supported by the renminbi, which represents about 40% of the index. But it was the clear outperformance of Asian currencies that was the one of the biggest rationales for investing in them during the big bull market that started in 2001. So the Singapore dollar went from about 1.85 to 1.2 over the course of a decade, and that greatly enhanced the rationale for investing in that country. And we saw exactly the same thing happening in Brazil. So the Latin America dollar index, it's really not looked after very well, because you can see there's an awfully big spike in the chart. But we are starting to see at least some evidence of support building in the region of the lower side of the range. So the lows that were put in March are beginning to offer support. Now, the two big constituents of that index are the Mexican peso, which has steadied over the last few weeks from 22 down to 21, and it's also helping to demonstrate some support in the region of 22, and that's significantly stronger than the low that we had in 2020, which was closer to 26. And the Brazilian real has been building a base Well, hopefully it's a base over the course of the last 3 or 4 years. And so far, at least, that six level has held. And I think 3 or 4 years is an exaggeration. It's been more like 18 months. So we're definitely seeing, though, that the real has steadied over the last 2 days. It's confirming near-term support or resistance for the dollar at the upper side. And if we can see the real strengthen, and particularly if it can eventually break out of this range, well, then that's going to be a green light for interest in the stock market. And I think that this is perhaps the most important point, that the Bloomberg Dollar Index has more of the emerging market currencies in it than the conventional dollar index. And the dollar is unwinding its short-term overbought condition. But it's got some work to do in order to break this uptrend that's been going up since the beginning of June. But the most significant portion of this index is the euro dollar. And the euro is steadying, so it's found at least near-term support around the 1.1 area. And now we're starting to see a higher reaction low coming in. But ultimately, it's going to have to do more than that to break the downward bias overall and at least break the sequence of lower rally highs. So obviously, we've got the potential here that it can unwind the short-term oversold condition, but it's certainly got to do more than that in order to demonstrate that we can see the euro trend higher, because Europe doesn't want higher interest rates, and they're probably going to be the second to last country to begin to remove, or region to begin to remove monetary accommodation. Japan will probably be the last one. And the yen continues to trend lower, or the dollar continues to trend higher against it. So I think that's really significant. So when we think then about where the global opportunities are likely to be, well, China allowing their renminbi to advance, and the efforts so far successful to ensure that the property market deleveraging doesn't affect the wider economy, and this obviously is a sector that needs to be monitored, and any weakness in the currency would certainly be some, or significant weakness, I should say, would be a warning sign. But the strength of the currency today is certainly more encouraging. It holds out the prospect of emerging markets starting to do better, particularly Asian ones. Now, I created a couple of different charts today, and I'm going to post them in comment of the day. And let me make this one a little bigger. So this clearly shows the Nasdaq's outperformance relative to the S&P, then relative to Australia, and then we've seen that a couple of the others, like Europe and Canada, have got pretty similar performance. And this also helps to demonstrate that the strength of the dollar over the course of the last few years has been a significant factor in both flattering the performance of Wall Street and then negating some of the performance of the other indices. And it's been equally true for most of the major emerging markets. So both the S&P and the Nasdaq have clearly outperformed, and then just about everything else has been a similar performance. So India, Brazil, Indonesia and South Africa have had a pretty similar performance, but Brazil in particular has underperformed in really quite profound manner. So it's only had an annualized return of 1.5% over the course of the last 13 years, whereas the Nasdaq has done 10 times better every year than the, or excuse me, the S&P 500 has done 10 times better than Brazil has in US dollar terms over the last 13 years. So any kind of change to that broad environment, where we can definitely continue to see that raw industrial commodity prices are still in the region of their all-time peak. Now, we've had a whopping advance in the spot prices of raw commodities over the course of the last 18 months, and we've certainly had some consolidation over the last week or two, but they are starting to steady. And we're also in the region, at least, of the peak from back in 2011, so it wouldn't be all that surprising to see a little consolidation coming through in here. And of course, the higher oil prices go, the better it is for somewhere like Brazil. And oil prices do continue to rebound from the short-term low as well. Now, I don't think that we're going to have prices significantly above $90, and supply will increase the higher prices go. But that could potentially be beneficial for somewhere like Brazil, because they've got higher cost oil, and the performance of Petro Brasileiro is right in the region of the upper side of the range. But in US dollar terms, it's held a sequence of higher reaction lows since March of 2020, and it's just now pushing back above the trend mean for the first time in a couple of months. So we've definitely seen that value has returned to significant portions of the emerging markets, and PE ratios are significantly lower. But people aren't really interested in value as long as these Fang Man plus Tesla stocks continue to trend higher. And they are still trending higher. And they have a market cap now of 12.2 trillion. And Apple is closing in on a market cap of 3 trillion. It's up to 2.85 trillion right now, and the share is pushing on. Now, this is obviously a factor, or I guess a product of massive monetary accommodation. And that would also mean that the continued advance is going to be very much dependent on the accommodation remaining very liquid. And high yield spreads had been pushing higher last week, but they contracted yesterday and are continuing to pull back. Now, one thing I think is rather interesting is when we look at the absolute performance of the high yield bond ETF, it pulled back and broke the sequence of higher reaction lows. And now it has rebounded, so it is now testing the sequence of lower rally highs and the region of the trend mean. And in nominal terms, it's been trending downwards since 2013. But when we look at the total return, and sorry that I didn't do that correctly. When we look at the total return of the high yield bond sector, well, we can take away the benchmark for the moment and simply look at the fact that since 2013, prices have been going up on a total return basis. And most particularly, they've been going up since the lows in 2020. So now we've had a deeper pullback, and even on a total return basis, it's broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. And now it's testing the sequence of lower rally highs. So on a total return basis, we're at a really important level for high yield bonds, because if it can push through and up out of this deteriorating price environment, well, then that's going to be really bullish for stocks. And the rebound we've had has obviously been beneficial for stocks overall. On the other hand, if high yield bonds fail to maintain this rebound and then continue to drop down, and this turns into another downward trending environment like we saw at the end of 2018 or in 2015, well, then that's going to weigh on stocks. And I do think that the puts on Apple are really very cheap. Now, and when we look, and I think we do have to go off and look at extremely long dated options, well, then you can pick up puts that are basically in the money for $30. And there's obviously the potential that even if Apple were to pull back to the mean, you'd be in the money. And if it eventually starts to unwind this extraordinary market cap, well, then there's the potential that one could make significant money on those leaps. So this is an accelerating trend, and the pace of the advance has definitely picked up. So the economy continues to do well. Investors are continuing to support these extraordinarily large cap companies. And Facebook, or what it likes to be called more recently, Meta Platforms, is continuing to bounce from the region of the trend mean and the upper side of the underlying range. And companies like Tesla, where the valuation implies that the company will be making every car in the world within the next 10 years, but it continues to bounce from the 1,000 level and is holding the breakout. So we're still in a benign environment for these extraordinarily large companies. So the attraction of value, particularly in the emerging markets, particularly in the commodity markets, is certainly there. But we don't yet have the push factor. So we have the pull, but we don't have the push for people to get out of some of these highly appreciated assets because they're still trending higher. And it's one thing to identify bubbly characteristics, and we have them, there's no question of that. But we don't have the kinds of factors yet to suggest that the bubble is about to pop. And it's usually when either oil prices would have to surge higher. And by surge, I mean they would have to go from where they are currently and break out to new all-time highs and then some. Or we would need to see a significant effort to withdraw liquidity from the market. And we're only at the moment beginning to talk about tapering. And that suggests that there is still room for this market to continue to push higher because the trends overall remain quite consistent. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.